I believe it's 143 according to the standards. So we'll slowly get started because I'm sure other people are looking at the real time. So you are going to be doing that survey thing and giving me a copy of it by the end of the class. So I hope you looked at that question. Does anybody have any idea? Are you concentrating too much on the pigeons? So the question that I have there is, given two randomly chosen web pages on the web, what is the probability that you can click your way from first page to the second page? What's the probability that you can click your way from the first page to the second page? That's what I want to know. And obviously, I'm not expecting an analytical answer right now, but does anybody have a guess who hasn't already seen where this information comes from? Does anybody have a guess? Wait. I have a feeling you may know. Other people. See, this is better than a pop quiz, right? I mean, at least I'm not grading you. I didn't at least tell you who I am, but clearly I must be in charge right now. So guess. Some guess. What do you think? It's 50%, 100%? 100% probability that you can go from one page, any page, to any other page. Wow. I mean, you cannot just stop, you know, clicking, right? I mean, at some point of time, you can't just restart and go and give the URL. What I'm saying is, you go to the page one, there may be links on the page one, you click on that, you go to page seven, you click on that, go to page nine, you click on that, page 25, and before you die, would you ever reach page two in doing so? What is this problem reminding you of? How many of you know the Kevin Bacon problem? See? So what's the connection between the Kevin Bacon problem and this? So Kevin Bacon problem, essentially, for those of you who don't care about Kevin Bacon, is in essence trying to connect anybody in Hollywood to Kevin Bacon, presumably. Not even in Hollywood, anybody. So you would say, take somebody like this, so they have gone to school with somebody who then went and had a coffee one day with this other person who actually said hello to somebody else who then knows Kevin Bacon. So just four links and you have Kevin Bacon. Okay? So there are two ways of looking at this problem. One is, this guy, whoever this guy is, 100%, you, okay, is incurable optimist. He thinks everybody is connected to everybody in the world. I don't know if it's optimism or pessimism. In fact, if I think everybody is connected to everybody, I would basically commit suicide, because any mistake I do would be known to everybody, right? You know, everybody would talk to everybody. We actually live in a world where we know that neither is it 100% connected, nor is it very low connectivity. In fact, upfront, more likely than not, most people would think, you know, web being how large it is, it will be pretty darn small probability that two random pages would actually be connected from one to the other. Okay. It turns out that there is no obvious analytical way of answering these kinds of questions. What might you want to do to answer this question? Is there something, again, I'm jumping way into the pool and hoping that you would swim with me. I don't know how to swim myself, but I'm hoping you would swim with me. Before I go back and do the usual boring, these are all the things that would be done in the semester stuff. Okay? So you guys used web, right? Who hasn't used web? Everybody has used web. So you know what you have some idea of the kind of problem we are talking about. So my question is there something about web that we can just look and think about it ourselves and figure out what might this probability be? Or do you think, or do we have any possible idea? Suppose I give you all the time in the world and all the bucks, you know, I'll get a Defense Advanced Project Research Agency to give you the money to figure this probability out. How would you go about doing it? One idea I would think is to get the entire web graph. Okay? And if you haven't thought about those sorts of things and you assumed, oh my God, web is so big, I can't even consider doing that, you're in the wrong class. Because web is not big enough. If it is too big, then we can't do anything with it. 3 billion pages or whatever that Google is currently bragging about is still very small compared to the national deficit, right? So these are really small numbers we're talking about. Larger than your data structures programs that you have written, but these are small numbers, okay? So the question is, just get a 3 billion graph, 3 billion node graph, okay? And just put all the edges. If there are two nodes, you put edges between node 1 to node 2 if there is a directed way of going from node 1 to node 2. Okay? You guys know this graph, right? So the question would then be, if you make this graph, how would it look? And maybe looking at that graph, you can actually compute this probability. Okay? So does anybody have any feel for how this graph might look? Again, I know that you haven't taken this course already. If in case you're worried as to whether I'm testing you on the course that I'm supposed to be doing at the end of the course. But there is a great saying which says that you are going to learn only those things that you almost already are ready to learn or almost already know. Okay? So I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I'm going to teach you something that you never thought of in your life. I have to use the time I have to get whatever I'm teaching you to the stuff that you already know, okay? So it's not that hard. So my question is, do you have any intuition at all as to how this graph might look like?
Can't be read.
What, can't be read? Why can't it be read? Why can't it be read? 3 billion node graph is not hard to put in. So the question is, so obviously, if I were to draw, 3 billion node graph here, I think I'm looking, at least first time I've thought about it, I'm looking that there will be very few properties for this graph. It'll be a bunch of nodes, a bunch being 3 billion, and bunches of edges. Okay, this is where I start from. What's interesting is, let me see if I can show you how this graph looks. Web is a bow tie, okay? The reason I bring this up is somebody who has a lot of time on their hands some years back looked at a large crawl of Alta Vista. How many people even know the word Alta Vista? Wow, you guys are old. Okay, my son only knows Google, that's it. And, he has no idea of any other web search engines. But Alta Vista, of course, so what are the other search engines that people know of? Does anybody know InfoSeek? Wow, you guys are really old. Okay. You probably know as many as I do. Anyway, so the interesting thing, of course, is the number of web search engines we used to have and the number that actually work right now. There's so few. But anyway, Alta Vista, of course, was one of the better search engines at one point of time. Nobody seems to be interested in being caught dead using it right now. And we'll actually find out why. But the Alta Vista was being run by essentially DEC and Compaq. And so DEC has this DEC Western Research Labs where a bunch of people basically looked at the large graph of the web. They basically took the crawl that Alta Vista did and tried to analyze that graph. In fact, the analysis itself was done at IBM Almaden. By a bunch of folks, including, I think, Andrew Tompkins. And notice that if the analysis cannot be putting all billion nodes on a little slide in front of you, it makes no sense. So I'm asking, are there interesting properties that can be, are there interesting statements that you can make about it? And what they found was the following very interesting idea, very interesting phenomenon, which is there are about three large-scale regions to the web, at least as of 1999. Okay, this is the last time this call was done. and of which about 21% are basically the loser pages, that are pages like mine and most of yours. You know, we point to others, but nobody seems to point back to us. You know, we would like them to point to, we give them money, but they don't seem to. Okay? So we are the, this is the losers of the world. Okay? And then there are these D, this particular side, this C, the size C, which is approximately about the same size, 19% of the pages, which are the gods of the web. They are so important that other people point to them and they don't point to anybody. You know, I mean, it's like they are, you know, can you think of, as I'm saying this, can you think of pages which don't point to point, no, other pages? Google actually does point, but that's a different story. Normally, the pages that actually happen, that come here, is that these are the pages that are typically intra-corporate pages. So if you by mistake ever get into an AT&T page or an IBM page, they'll make a humongous deal. Now you are in the IBM web space, and then you're about to leave. They'll say, now you're about to leave our web space. Are you sure you want to leave? All that stuff, you know. So these are the people who don't want you to get out. So this is the 19%. And then there is 39% of pages, approximately, which sort of point to each other and also point to outsiders. And then this 21%, of course, point to people here as well as there. Okay. Now, why is this interesting from our question? First of all, it's interesting that web is a bow tie. I mean, this is useful, you know, Italian restaurant conversation with your girlfriend or boyfriend this evening. I mean, I'm giving you lots of useful information. You know, you know, order bow tie pasta and then, you know, sort of get the conversation to this. Anyway, so there is the bow tie aspect of it. The second aspect is that actually now that you know this, you can answer my question as to what is the probability that two randomly chosen pages are connected at all. Well, for them to be connected, it better be the case that the first page is from here and here, and the second page is from here and here. That's the only time when you are connected. Okay? So that's it. So 0.21 plus 0.39 times 0.39 plus 0.19. Okay? And that would give you 0.348, I believe, which is approximately 35% probability that two random pages are actually connected. You can click your way to. Okay? Don't tell me that this cannot be true because my page doesn't seem to be connected to some access page. If you do that, you know, you have no idea of probabilities. Okay? I mean, you could be the 75% of the unlucky cases. Okay. Now, forget about everything here. Let's start all over again. More in a more staid and sedentary fashion. This is the core CSE 494, 598, information retrieval, mining, and integration on the internet. If you haven't figured this out by now, you're in trouble. And then what I'm planning to do today is give you some idea of what this course is likely to be about. Okay. What I just said in this example just now itself should give you some interesting pointers. For example, somebody said, if you are one of the people who thought, my God, I can't even consider a 3 billion size graph, you are in the wrong business. Okay? Large scale data structures, large scale graphs, and analysis of them is something that we have to do. Okay? Thankfully, I only talk about them and you get to do it in the project. So there is a little difference, but other than that, you do have that issue of dealing with large scale data. Okay? But we'll also figure out a lot more other things that this course will be about. So the first thing, I am Subba Rao Kambhampati. I go by Rao, you can call me that. That's the email address, and there is a web page. How many of you have not seen the web page till now? Okay, good, only one person. And so now you have seen it. And if you ever want to find out where the web page is, this has a nice little address, rakaposhi.es.ac.edu slash CSE 494, which is very easy to remember as far as I am concerned. But nobody remembers URLs, right? You just give it to Google. Just say ASU CSE 494 and then say I'm feeling lucky. And you would hopefully get to my class. I think you do. Unless one of the other 494 guys become too darn popular, but right now I'm still winning. Okay. So that's way to get to the web page. Web page is very important. Everything about this class would be on that. TA for this class, there is a TA for this class, Jianchun Fan, there is. So if you're really unhappy about what's going on in the class, you can talk to him. He's in general, he has the advantages of Jianchun is he's actually suffered through this class last time, the last time I gave it, and he did quite well, and he knows how to do the project. And if you come and ask me exactly what do I do with this particular Java exception, I would send you to Jianchun Fan. So you could cut the middleman out and go directly to him if you have questions about project, which we'll be talking about in a minute. Okay, so that he's actually a very well-qualified person to help you in this course, and his research area itself is related to the kind of stuff that we'll be talking about in the class. Okay. Web page is not on the blackboard. I hate blackboard. Unless people tell me, they'll fire me until I put stuff on web blackboard, I won't. So right now, it's in Rakaposhi. Okay, that's where it is. Okay. So what I want to talk a little bit about the course outcomes by asking you, what did you think these were going to be? The reason I ask this is my son knows about Google, and he's 8. Okay, he has lots and lots of ideas, most of which are wrong. For example, he thinks Google is the smartest thing because they know all the information, and every once in a while I have to keep trying to explain to him that, you know, they really are just, you know, an indexing service. They don't know a thing. But you know, I don't think he believes me. He also thinks that computer means Windows, which is much, much more worrisome to me than the other part. But anyway, the point is, since my son has many ideas about Google and, you know, he hasn't yet actually started real education, I thought you should know a lot more than that. So I'm sure you have some ideas as to what this course is going to be about. Does anybody want to say anything as to what they thought this is going to be about? By the way, speak when I ask you to. Okay. Otherwise, we could have really long, awkward pauses and the class will end. Yes, sir. Implementation of a search engine. Okay, what other things? That's possibly one of them. Yes, sir?
A few data mining techniques.
Why would you think data mining is even relevant to the title of the course?
Yeah, it includes the word mining.
Okay, includes the word mining. Yeah, I can't argue with that kind of watertight arguments. Yes, other things. Yes. In the field of search, in the field of web search, okay. Recent advances in the field of search. Others?
How the data on internet is organized and how it is being retrieved.
How it is organized and how it's being retrieved, okay. You guys are hearing this, right? We are actually defining the course right now as we speak. You know, if I hear something that is not in the course, I will say that. But until then, we'll keep going. Other things? Comparison of search engine algorithms. Do we even care? There's only one search engine, right? So how many people think that everything that needs to be done about search has been done? And all we need to know is just figure out what Google's current news release is, and then we'll be done. How many of you think that? Good. I'm very happy to hear that. You have, you know, basically passed half of the problems, which is this mind block that more people than smarter than I am, and they've already thought about the problem and what hope do I have. That's a defeatist attitude. In fact, we'll talk about it a lot. One of the reasons Google is the best search engine is because they just need to be better than the competition, which sucks, unfortunately. Okay? So when you guys become the competition, you know, you could give them a run for the money. So there are lots and lots that can be done for web search. And it's amazing how little it takes to make people like us happy. You know, in fact, it's hard to even think about what else Google doesn't do, because in some sense, that's defined what you want. I mean, a sufficiently good technology, a winning technology, is one which makes you change your mind as to what you really wanted. You know, originally wanted something such as, you know, if I want the time, they should give me the time. Okay, that's what you went there. And now if you say, I want the time, we'll say, you know, you click on this thing and you read all the English, there may be time there. And we say, wow, that's so nice. You know, if I say that, if you ask me what the time is and I say, you know, go read this book or, you know, go look at this watch, you won't be happy. Okay, but you're happy with Google. So interestingly, they just solve part of it, and that's good enough right now because nobody else does any better. Other things that you thought this course might be about. So a lot of you just showed up, basically. It was the longest name of all the courses, I think, and longest instructor name also, I'm sure. But so, you know, there is some interesting stuff there. So any more comments? Yes, sir. How do you integrate different information that's available on the web? How many people understood what he just said? Yeah. This is neat stuff about how a technology can be so effective that you reduce your expectations. Okay. There is information on the web that's being integrated right now. You know who is doing it? You guys. You want something, you click on some pages, you click on some more pages, you read stuff from here, you read stuff from there, you kind of put this all together in your head and reach conclusions. Okay? So why can't this be automated? Okay, why can't site 1 and site 2 and site 3 be connected together such that people are not telling me click here, they're telling me the answer to my question. Okay? Again, one of the interesting things for a course on internet search is you have a lot of prejudices. It's not meant to be. Prejudice actually only means you have decided before checking into the details. That's all it means, prejudice. Okay, you have prejudices. If I were to teach you a course on complexity hierarchy and its relation to Kolmogorov complexity, you know, I think very few of you would have prejudices because most of you probably don't understand those names. And even if you do, it's not like day in and day out you're using this stuff. Unfortunately, the web search is something that you guys are using. And so you have some ideas and you might actually wind up thinking that's the only thing that's worth doing and nothing more. One last chance for anybody who might want to say what else might be in this course or what else you think should be in this course. By the way, if I haven't already put that in that survey sheet at the end, please feel free to write topics that I don't mention in today's class as going to be part of the course. In the sense, if there is a particular topic that you thought would be in this course and, you know, I'm not talking about it at all, I would like to hear about it. And I might wind up talking about it if enough people are interested. Okay? Okay, so enough of that exercise. Let's try to give you a simple idea, I guess, as to what this course might be about. I mean, I'll try to do it in different levels of granularity. This is one level at which I'm going to explain to you what the course is, and then I'll go into more deeper level, and go into more deeper level before the class ends, and then, of course, we'll have the semester to actually realize this. So you should at least be able to answer the following questions. How search engines work and why some are better than others, which somebody actually brought up. The other is, can web be seen as a collection of semi-structured databases? And if so, can we adapt technology out there, such as database technology, to actually put databases together? So somehow integrate information from multiple sources in coming up with answers. Okay? Then a third one is, can useful patterns be mined from the data that's on the web so that you could provide information that's aggregate information rather than individual pages. Okay, These are three questions for which you should know the answers by the end of the course. Okay? None of them, I'm not talking about yes or no kind of answers, but more deeper, the kinds of techniques that are out there and what you could possibly do about it. So there are three pieces in this course. One is information retrieval, which is, roughly speaking, how search engines work. So if all you have are pages and pages of text, and somebody wants to ask you a question for which the answer might well be in one of these pages of text, how would you give them the right set of pages to look at? Okay? Normally, the way you would answer that question, if you are the assistant, not the computer, but you are the assistant, you would actually understand the question, and you would have already read all these pages beforehand and figured out, you know, you have a bulging head, you know everything in all these pages. And, you know, as soon as somebody asks a question, you'll say, yeah, page 54, line 7 has the answer. And in fact, when you know at that level, you can pick that line 7 and show it to them. Okay? This, in essence, is AI complete, okay, or intelligence complete. In a sense, it's as hard to do as to be intelligent, because you essentially have to understand the question, which is natural language processing, understand pages, which is even more natural language processing, and decide which question's answer is in what page. That's what the right way to do it is. Now, natural language processing is very nice, except it does not yet scale to the web level. You would see that it is scaling a lot than you might have thought of, if you have actually heard of natural language processing before. But much of what web search engines do is to say, to heck with it. We won't understand. Okay? We won't understand. We'll just act as if, you know, we will think of words as essentially strings and compare strings. Okay? And then hope that people who are pestering us can be made happy just with that kind of analysis. Lo and behold, in fact, most of us are happy with that itself. Okay? So information retrieval, in essence, can be thought of as natural language processing light. That means not doing natural language processing the right way, but to do it the wrong way, which is to assume that the words have no meaning. The words are just, you know, templates, and you compare templates to templates. What's interesting is that you can get by quite a bit of mileage with this sort of oversimplification. If you came to information retrieval from natural language processing, you should be surprised that anybody is taking search engines seriously at all. And yet then you have to ask yourself, am I taking them seriously? And you say yes. So it sort of makes sense that basically there is, you can get reasonable results as to what might be relevant pages even without doing full understanding. You guys know this, right? I mean, you can get reasonable grades on exams without truly understanding courses. Okay, we live lives this way. Okay, so Google now is living a macro life for all of us without understanding what's in your page. It's then already, you know, recommending it to various people. Okay, that's the first part. The second part is information integration and aggregation. The first part, basically, given a query, you are essentially just telling the user, okay, here are the pages that you might want to look at. Okay, and in the second part, we'll be looking at solving the following kinds of problem. Suppose you have each of the pages contains information that you've already put in some sort of a data tuple format. So you extracted it and put it as a bunch of data tuples. Okay? Then suppose there's a question which requires essentially taking information from here, taking information from here, and if you're a database dweeb, join, do selections, do projections, and see if people can be made happier that way, as against just giving them pages. In essence, that's what is information integration. Okay, we'll talk about that for part of the course. And then information mining, in a sense, is looking for patterns even when you don't completely understand the pages. So for example, I'll give you examples of this. One example, it turns out, is actually the whole search engines. I mean, all of you know PageRank, right? PageRank can actually be thought of as mining the link structure of the web for useful information. Okay. So all they are saying is, if more and more people are pointing to you, you must be a big guy, or you have tons of bucks and you know gave it to your friends to point to you. But mostly, hopefully, you are a big guy. Okay. So that's sort of a mining of the link structure. We can also mine the text itself. We can also mine our interactions with the web. Interactions with the web are mined pretty famously in the collaborative filtering, right? If you ever make the mistake of going to Amazon and buy a book, then they have typecast you with just one sale. And they say, you know, people who are just as dweebish as you are also buying the following books. So you want to keep up with them, so you might want to buy these books too. And many a time, unfortunately, they're right. That's the sad part. You know, there's a classic saying, unfortunately, I have to paraphrase it because I forgot the exact saying, which goes something like everybody else, I too think I'm unique. You know, we all would like to think we're all unique, but there's a lot that's common between our behavioral patterns. And that's why junk mailings do well. That's why collaborative filtering does well. And so what we are doing in the mining aspect, basically with respect to web, is to look for patterns in either the transactions or in the link structure or in the text structure itself. Okay? Those are the three top level things that we would look at, approximately one third each, but some one thirds are created more equally than others. So maybe information retrieval might actually wind up getting a little bit more than the other two. Okay. And then other topics as permitted by time. This is the when do we stop this temper? 2:55, right? Okay. It's not because I want to be done. I just normally have trouble stopping. So 2:55, that's fine. This is the set of topics that I actually did the last time I taught this course. Okay. This is just an example. I might do something different this time, but I don't think it will be completely different. Okay, so it will give you some idea about fleshing out of those three topics. So for example, we talk about things like text retrieval, vector space ranking, and a bunch of issues involved in actually organizing search engines, the indexing and retrieval aspects. We'll look at page rank sorts of computation, which is essentially link mining, structure of, you know, mining the structure of the links. And then we'll also look at clustering, which is actually another kind of mining. How many of you have seen Vivisimo? Okay. By the way, I would actually like to start the following thing. You know, normally I don't expect that any of you are in this class until like next Monday, because there's a general floating population. But we'll start on like next Monday onwards. I would like people to suggest, you know, all of you should feel free to suggest an interesting, cool site, okay? Please don't suggest sites that will get me into trouble with ASU if I were to show them on the, big place here. But neat sites that you came across that you want to just bring to my notice. And then every class I would like to try and pick one and just spend like a minute or 2 minutes talking about it, okay? There is one of the problems in working in this area, taking a course in this area, is pretty much by the time you walk out of the door, the state of the art has progressed. It's true in pretty much everywhere else too, actually. Okay? It's true in databases, it's true in AI, it's true in software engineering, for crying out loud. Except the state of the art in those courses is so far out there that you never even got a chance of looking at it in your undergraduate level course. So the fact that it went further more doesn't make any difference to you. Whereas courses like this, just because most people are figuring out how to do these things relatively recently, you get the not entirely false feeling, a reasonably accurate feeling that you know exactly where the state of the art is, and then you take rest for 3 weeks and it has moved. That's true for any state of the art. You know, people are, you know, busy bees, they're working and doing new stuff. So one thing that I would like to do is to get these sites that people recommend, which is sort of related to interesting sorts of things that we might want to discuss, okay? And I'd like to try showing these, okay? An example, of course, if somebody hasn't already pointed out, Vivisimo is one. How many of you have seen? Somebody said they've seen Vivisimo. Okay. You guys should go and see it. Okay, the idea is that, you know, instead of looking at NewYorkTimes.com or some other things, you can probably look at vivissimo.com and see what it is doing. What it does actually is it clusters your search results. So Google, for example, gives you the top 10 results. Okay? Now those top 10 results, it may well be, I mean, although it tries to do something about clustering related results together, it may well be that they're all about different meanings of the query that you have. Different meanings of the query that you have. And it just puts them interspersed, 1 to 10. And many of these clustering engines, what they do is they take, for example, Vivissimo, if I'm not mistaken, actually cannibalizes half of other search engines. Is that true, or do they have their own indexing? They have indexing? Okay. Dogpile, yeah. So Dogpile is another one where basically they call somebody like Google, get the top 100 results, and then quickly cluster them. They say, oh, the first 34th and 97th, they seem to be all about Rao and his stuff. Okay, and 75, 98, 2000, and then the 29, all those things seem to be about computer science department advising. So they just cluster these and put them into different clusters. And so now you, instead of being shown 100 links, you're being shown maybe 10 clusters. In principle, that's actually way better than just being shown pages. Okay, just being shown pages. Because pretty much most of your search that you do on the web with keywords has multiple meanings, and the web, basically Google just decides that you must be interested in the page, meaning one. That's all you shall get. The top, most of your results would be probably meaning one. If meaning one and two are close enough, it might wind up showing five from here and five from here. If not, it's basically just showing you, one might dominate. Okay. The reason I bring this up is clustering is something that is actually used to in search engines, more and more to organize related pieces of pages together. Okay. It's a sort of a unsupervised mining technique. Okay. And so there's another place where you wind up doing mining, which has nothing to do with the link structure. Okay. And then we'll do some, as we are going from here towards here, you're kind of getting into mining stuff, right? And then collaborative filtering, we'll talk about collaborative and content-based filtering techniques, which wind up being, content-based filtering in particular winds up being an example of supervised learning. It's an idea called classification learning, which is a known problem that is being applied to internet approaches, internet problems, web problems, okay? In fact, I will come to that point in a minute, that much of what we might wind up doing is to take a classical, traditional discipline and bring it to web, because there are interesting changes that need to be done because there is web, okay? That's what really this course is about. So otherwise, if I were to teach, there is such a thing called traditional information retrieval course. The word traditional doesn't have to be bad, by the way. Okay, I don't mean it in a sneering way. Information retrieval is actually an active field. Okay, and much before Google and search engines came along, doctors and librarians and people who are interested deeply in some subject would wind up asking long questions. Okay. And then somebody then has to go into the database and find the actual technical paper that might be relevant to this question. Has anybody heard the word LexisNexis? LexisNexis, okay, that's, I am sad to say that even puts you even farther back chronologically in terms of your age. I only hear it now anymore in NPR, because LexisNexis is one of the people who tend to support NPR. But LexisNexis made its name way before Google and all these people came, doing traditional information retrieval. Okay, so for example, if FBI wants to look for, they have all these dossiers on all these people, not you guys, I guess, but on those side at least. And then they have some random description of who they think is going to do the next bad thing, and they want to pick up all the guys who match this description. And I'm sure you would hope that their matching algorithm is good. right? Because otherwise they would be knocking on your door. And it better not be Google style, you know, words have no meaning kind of this thing. Okay? So information retrieval existed. FBI analysts would be doing this, for example. Doctors used to do it. Lawyers, you know, use LexisNexis a lot. Okay? What is different now is all of us use information retrieval. And what is different is we are famously impatient. Doctors are paid money to actually do diagnosis correctly. If they do it wrongly, they will be sued. So they don't mind asking questions, elaborating the question, asking more questions until they get the right answer. We will give a keyword and we want the answer right there. If not, we'll just change to the next search engine, right? By the way, that brings me to an interesting point, which is, what do you think is the average size of a web query? If you were to count a web query in terms of the number of keywords that you type, what do you think is the, no, not you. What do you think is the size of the average web query? 1.5? 3? 3 words. And you're expecting miracles to happen in 3 words. You know, all of us should just hit ourselves on the back. You know, not here, back patting, but hitting ourselves on the head, because we're being way too impatient. You know, I mean, imagine asking like a 2.5, in fact, it's not even 3, 2.5, okay? 2.5 word query and expecting miracles to happen. If not, hey, I'm not interested. You know, I expect results here. What do you think is the normal size of a query that is submitted to LexisNexis by these dweebs who are paid to do that stuff, like the lawyers and the doctors and the FBI analysts? I mean, if FBI were to try to, you know, knock on your door by just putting interesting keywords like terrorist, right? Right. You know, I'm not even sure whether what's his name is coming at the top of the list or not. I have no idea. We should actually check. By the end of the class, you guys should say terrorist and see who Google thinks is the top terrorist right now. But you know, if FBI is doing that, you're in trouble, right? And I'm hoping that they at least say, you know, a large number of lines, hopefully. Terrorist who doesn't look like Rao Kambam Party, who starts off like things like that. Anyway, so the point I'm trying to make is, the LexisNexis kinds of queries normally are tens of words long. Web search queries are twos of words long, not even twos, it's just ones of words, two words long. There you go, the difference between a traditional discipline, information retrieval, which we will talk about, and its application to web with its, you know, large-scale lay clientele, that is you and me, who want instant gratification, and how that changes the issues of retrieval. Okay. Anyway, continuing this along, so we'll talk about collaborative filtering, etc. here, and we will talk to the last, towards the last section, we'll talk a lot about information integration, which is, if you were to think of these sources, these text sources are actually data sources. Okay. Can you do joins, etc., on these sources and give more interesting answers than you could by just showing the URLs? By the way, in case you can't even conceptualize what it is that I'm talking about, I'll have an example in a minute which tries to explain to you the classic difference between a retrieval style query versus an information integration style query. And once you see it, you'll understand. Okay? I believe me. Okay. One of the other things, a couple of other things we'll do, this whole issue of databases and information retrieval, in a sense, can be brought together. It turns out, how many of you have taken database courses of some sort? So all of you know databases, most of you, okay? So an answer in a database, I mean, a tuple, given a query and a tuple from the database, I ask the question, is this tuple an answer to this query? How many possible answers can there be for this question? You understand what I'm asking? So I gave you a query. I gave you a tuple from my database. I mean, a tuple. And I'm asking you, if you are the Oracle, not the San Francisco variety, but the Delphic one, could you tell, I mean, so you have to answer this question for me. So the answer could have what possible number of choices? 100 choices, 2 choices, what? 2. Just 2. 2. Yes, no. Yes, no. No, maybe. Maybe means maybe you should look for a different job, not in databases, right? Maybe it's not going to cut it. For databases, either it's an answer or it's not an answer. That's what you guys did in 412, right? And can you imagine telling Susan Urban or one of these people that maybe this is an answer? You know, I feel like putting it in. Hey, maybe everything is an answer. Maybe the entire database is an answer. Now, if you think in terms of the text search, if I say the word bush, which you will see is pretty favorite keyword search for me as time goes on, I bring in a page about South Africa, is it an answer to the word bush? Why? You are the people who actually spent time in geography classes. There are only two people who said yes, by the way. The rest of you slept through geography classes. So why is South Africa page connected to bush? There are bushes in Africa, that's true too. And there are Kalahari bushmen in Africa. In fact, I think one time I gave this midterm question which plays on that word, that two different meanings of the word bush. Okay, and in fact, if you are a biologist, not biologist, whoever, the people who specialize in Kalahari tribesmen, right? And they say bush, they have no interest in knowing all about what's current activity in Crawford of George Bush. They're more interested in the other bush, which is the Kalahari Bushman or the bushes of the world, all that stuff. Okay? And yet, Google doesn't care who you are. If you ask bush, we'll give you the following answer. This is it. Okay? Now, the reason I actually got into this is, you notice this is a slippery slope. In fact, there is no yes, no answer. It's all a maybe answer. It's all a maybe answer. Okay, suppose you said the word AI and I showed you, information integration course page. Am I giving you the right answer or not? In fact, the word AI might not appear in anything I said in this particular class. But much of what I talked about are AI techniques. Okay? So this is relevant to the query information integration. In fact, you notice I changed from is it an answer or not to is it relevant. And relevance, of course, is this nice warm and fuzzy concept. More relevant versus less relevant, which leads us to a ranked set of results. Okay, so IR, for example, is all about ranking. You know, in fact, the entire web is an answer to your query, really. Some of them are zero relevant, some of them are 0.00001 relevant, some of them are like 0.97 relevant, some of them are 0.64 relevant. And I just need to rank them and show you the top few. Okay, so this is actually there is these two different viewpoints about the world that information retrieval and databases take. And it turns out that both of them can learn from each other. We have been talking about how information retrieval sorts of search engines, for example, can integrate information from across sources. But in fact, databases can learn the fact that, in fact, not all tuples in the database are created equal. Okay? Most people, when they ask a query, probably have some relevance metric in their head. And this becomes more and more interesting when random people like you and me are accessing databases. Think about something like travel agents, right? There is a database for all the US flights and their schedules. What is that database called? It's called Sabre. I think it's S-A-B-R-E. I'm just pronouncing it Sabre. Okay? Now, this existed way before, you knew about it. And the old days, only your trusted travel agent would have a customized connection to the Sabre database and will tell you these are the things that you might take if you're going to DC day after tomorrow. Okay? Now all of you have access to Sabre. Not just one access, multiple accesses to Sabre. Expedia connects to Sabre. Travelocity connects to Sabre. Somebody else connects to Sabre. Everybody connects to them. Now, when you start allowing random people off the road, out of the road, to start accessing databases, they tend to have this, you wind up having this emperor's new clothes kind of phenomenon. So things that people thought were good enough before are no longer good enough. You know, database people think SQL queries are pretty darn natural. And in fact, if you look at interesting database books, you would see one page long SQL query. SQL is the query language for relational databases. One page long SQL query. We just said that our normal users don't even have patience to write two keywords. Think about them actually figuring out SQL and writing in a precise query in one page or less, and one page or more rather. Zero chance. So database people have to start dealing with this ranking and realizing that the query that you guys are submitting is probably nothing to do with what you really want. Okay, I have this nice metaphor. You know, everybody, of all the people, the guys who actually figured this out long back are who? Used car salespeople. Used car salespeople live on the premise that the car that you're looking at is just the beginning of the conversation. So if you just by mistake go into a used car lot and look at this nice and shiny red car, and if that's not what the guy wants to sell you because the commission on that is low, you could be sure in the next 10 minutes somehow you would be looking at a green and shiny car because they have somehow said, you know, you really what you want is this. And they talk to you more, they try to change your query. Okay? In some sense, they assume that when you came in, you have imprecise idea of what car you might be interested in. And I'll make it precise by selling the car that will give me the maximum benefit, which is a reasonable way. Okay? And they have gotten, they have run with it. Think about it. You know, used car salesmen and women, unfortunately, there are not too many of them, but, you know, men at least, they're good. And in fact, they have a lot to offer to the new era of information retrieval and search engines. Because how do you, and if you are a commercial website, you know, you would like to see this too. You know, if you starting from a query, which is a bare bones query, how do I structure the interaction such that the user would have then given a Visa, you know, credit card number and made a large scale purchase? You know, people would be very happy to give you jobs if you have techniques for doing that. And used car sales people have been doing it forever. Okay? So anyway, that's the approximate breakup of the class. Books or lack thereof, there are no books, I think, as you know, as you probably would have figured out if you read the homepage. I have some good reference books. I have listed them there, but much of what is happening in this class is going to be based on readings. And for example, the next class would start looking at, so there is, where are the readings? There is the readings list, okay? And these are the readings list. So for example, the very first class, we would be talking about text retrieval. So you just click on the top bullet, print it and read it. That's what we'll be doing next class. Okay? And this is a dynamic list. I would be changing it. One thing that I want you to understand, this is important. In fact, for the rest of today's class, I'm going to spend some time talking about nuts and bolts of taking this class, for those of you who will actually wind up being there. In this particular case, anything is indented, it's not as important. Okay? So it's a secondary reading. Anything unindented, it's required reading. If it is indented multiple levels, it's even less important, okay? But I'm hoping that you get what you put in any classes, and especially classes like 494. And so you spend a lot more time reading more stuff, you learn a lot more. You know, it's not just the grade in the class, you know. Okay, that's regarding the, okay, prerequisites. I think you sort of should have gotten some idea based on the rambling discussion we had today. Data structures, databases, introduction to AI, they're all relevant. Okay? Plus some of the math that you thought you're never going to use in your life again, including even as we start, we would wind up using linear algebra, the stuff that you did, you know, in your linear algebra class. Things like eigenvectors, and eigenvalues, and maybe singular value decomposition, all this stuff, you know, is important stuff. In fact, there is a homework that's already up there. Okay, there's a homework up there, and you can start working on that. I just wrote Socket Open August 22nd, so I started putting questions today onwards. But at some point of time, I'll close the socket, and when I close the socket, you have maximum of a week time to return the homework. So don't expect me to tell you start working now. Okay? In fact, I'm telling you now, start working for the semester now, unless you drop it, in which case you're happy. But otherwise, you start working now. Okay? And these things, essentially, especially the first question, is gives you an idea of what you should remember if you have paid attention or if you had good memory of matrices and eigenvalues and eigenvectors. And I just can't understand for the life of me why the math guys don't do it. If, you know, they're always complaining that nobody pays attention to the linear algebra course, but if they just say that instead of linear algebra course, they say linear algebra and its applications to Google, you know, they have to find, you know, doormen and doorwomen to throw people out, because, you know, they cannot stop people from coming in. Because after all, my friends, PageRank is just directly connected to eigenvalues and eigenvectors. Okay? So you would start working on that, and, you know, it starts slow. Basically, it's a 2x2 matrix, and I'm asking things like determinants, inverses, eigenvectors, decompositions, and so on. If you want to know what you need to know about matrices, this is what you need to know. Do it, okay? Okay. As I said, you're primarily responsible for refreshing your memory. Okay, you don't have to remember everything that you ever learned. Much of learning is about knowing where to look if you were to solve that problem again. Okay, so if you've forgotten many of this stuff, you know, don't give up. Hopefully the second time you read, if you have a brain at all, it will be easier second time around. You know, so that's a good thing. So you didn't waste your time taking those courses. What this course is not intended to be. That shows up on my door if you ever show up to office hours and see me. Basically, I strongly believe that I shouldn't be teaching you stuff that is going to be obsolete like day after tomorrow. So I'm not going to teach you the standards, which keep changing, or the XMLs and the... So this course is not going to teach you how to be a webmaster. Unfortunately, I can't teach you how to increase your page rank. If I do, I would give a highly paid tutorial to people who are interested in doing that, and I'll cut you out. You know, I can make a lot more money that way. I won't expose you to the latest X buzzwords, the technology. You know, like the XML, XSL, XPointer, XPath, maybe some of these, but mostly none, okay? I assume that you're all computer science students, and you can pick these up if you need to, okay? But I'm going to spend some time, for example, on XML, but you'd be very surprised as to what I would do with it. I would try to spend time trying to explain to you how XML is different from relational model of the databases, which isn't exactly the stuff that you read in the Cliff's Notes to XML. Cliff's Notes to XML starts by saying, you shall start with a thing like this, you write something and you start like this. We won't do that, okay? I assume you can do that. Okay. Neither is this course really going to teach you how to really make money off of web. And you all know how to really make money off of web, which is the Nigerian conspiracy, or the longitudinal enhancements, and all this stuff. I, unfortunately, because of various regents issues, I can't go into those. So you really have to pick them up by just reading papers. A couple of things before we end, I guess. One is, why am I teaching this course? As I said, this is quickly, my motivation for teaching this course is my midlife crisis. So I have mostly done artificial intelligence work, and at some point of time, I've decided that query planning sounds to be planning, which is the stuff that I do, and so I got interested in it. And after I got interested in it, and I found it has nothing to do with the other planning I do, it was too late to back up. So I read way too many papers to figure this out, so I thought, hey, let's have half of the group be about this other kind of stuff, and another half be about, you know, the AI stuff. And it turns out that it came at the right time. You know, the midlife crisis, you're supposed to either buy a Ferrari Tesla or a Ferrari, one of these nice cars, or, you know, if you are a poorly paid professor, change areas. And if you're too worried about changing the area completely, change partially. So I have like two pieces of my group. This poor guy is in the data based information integration side of the group. And there's another group, another part which is AI oriented. Having said that, I've been in this for long enough time. I have a extended midlife crisis going on. I'm hoping to live for 150 or so years. So I have been in this area for long enough that I have a ton of stuff, not a large ton, but a small ton of stuff. And we have people all over the place. In fact, we might get you the guy in Amazon who might wind up telling us how this course might be relevant to what Amazon is doing, sometime. Okay, and there's a guy actually who's sitting here who went to Microsoft, and if I can break his resistance to divulging trade secrets, he might tell us how this course is relevant to Microsoft search engines and all that stuff. Okay, so we have connections. So that's one thing about why I'm teaching this course. If you haven't left until now, I guess you might want to know how this course would be graded. Projects and homework 45% approximately, midterm and final about 40%, and participation 15%. Okay, that's what it is. And class interaction is very important, so no sleeping. And not even reading Palm Pilot as somebody was doing the whole class today. Okay. One important thing is 470, as I said, I'm really an AI guy. So even though I'm teaching 494, I think of 471. But 494 and 598, some of the people here are actual undergraduate students, and others are actual graduate students, I think about 10 and 15, vice versa. So the only difference between them, that as far as this course is concerned, is after the entire course is over, on the day when I'm praying for divine guidance to convert numbers into letters, I pray two different prayers, one for undergraduate separately, one for graduate students separately. That's it. Okay, so undergraduate students will get their grades with respect to how other undergraduate students are doing. So if you want to throw out smarter people out of the class, don't throw out the graduate ones, only the undergraduate ones. And the same with graduate students. Okay? No other differentiation, otherwise you're equal. Projects, there is a project. It has one single project and three parts. It basically involves extending and experimenting with a mini search engine. That's what you would wind up doing. You can actually look at it by clicking on the project link on the web page that shows the last version that we have. It's likely to be very similar, but we reserve right to change. And it's not yet active in the sense you don't have to start working on the project right now, although, be my guest if you want to. You would wind up doing Java programming to do this project. I won't teach you Java. I am not sure that I know Java. Grasping level of Java is pretty okay, but if you never heard of Java, you're in trouble. Okay. If you have technical issues about the Java programming language, you would wind up talking to the teacher, who is there, who is pretty good. Okay, more interesting stuff. Honor code and trawling the web. This is a course on web. I'm not born yesterday. Any question I can ever make up, somebody has an answer for it already written in the format that you can submit to me back. In fact, it may well be that the questions I'm asking you to do, I have answers for them, and even though I removed the read permissions on them, Google cached them. And so you can find them. I'm telling you how to do it. There's a reason, which is even if you can find the answers, you are not supposed to use them. That's the honor code. If I can prove that you use somebody else's work, whether it is my own work previously, or anybody else's work in the class, or anybody else's work outside of this classroom to do the work without taking permission from me, you would pay for it. That's it. Okay, I would not repeat this ever again, but the first time you wind up getting into an academic plagiarism kind of quiz, you wouldn't want to be on the other side of the table from me, believe me. Okay, I'm a nice guy, but not at that point. Okay, so that's very important. having said that, I realized that I don't want you to stop reading web because of me, because you're so worried about it. So if, in general, most normal users of reading papers to understand how to answer a question is fine. Okay, what I'm saying is, don't copy an answer from somewhere. And I'm sure you're old enough to know the difference. If you don't, please ask me. Okay, send me an email, I'll get back to you. And okay, it or not okay. Okay. Sociological issues. It's getting to the end. Very important. Attendance in the class is very important. Okay. I take unexpected absences very seriously. You don't know me. Some of you know me. I take it personally. Okay. So if you are going to miss the class, normally what I say is, if you are going to break the leg to miss the class, let me know that you're about to break the leg, and that'll be okay. But normally, just don't stop coming to the class one day and come to the class next day. My side of the coin is, I'll make all the material available to you on the web page. Except I do actually have this chutzpah to believe that, in fact, I add more by actually talking about it rather than just showing you the slides. Okay, including this, I'm recording myself. It's an 18 megabyte file that will be available to you. Okay, and so if you want to rehear the entire class with the slides, that's fine. But this is not an invitation to stop coming. Okay, in fact, if you were to take this class, you're expected to show for all the classes. Okay, missing one class is bad, missing two is end of the world. Okay. Active concentration in the class is very important. There are tons of classes out there. You can take any one of them you want. Again, these things I only bring up now. Hopefully, we'll never again talk about these. But, I make sure that when I'm standing in front of you, I'm only thinking about the class here, nothing else. Okay, I leave my other world outside, and I want you to do the same. Okay, if not, find a class where the instructor doesn't mind what you do in the class as long as you get good grades. Okay, I'm not one of them, unfortunately. So I like teaching, but I like it if people are actually looking at me, not because I dress up so well, but because it means that people are maybe listening. And they can't listen to me while furiously typing into laptops or, looking into text messaging. Okay? I can do all the things that you guys can do, so please just don't do that. Okay. That's the last part of the thing. And occupational hazards, as far as this course is concerned, it's sort of in between a normal four-level course, like 471, 412, which are quite well fleshed out, and as I said, the state of the art is far enough away from you that you can't see it, hopefully. Okay? And graduate level courses where you are milling around, the good ones at any rate, where you are milling around with the people at the state of the art. Okay? This is sort of in between. You would get enough glimpses of the state of the art during the course, which also means that there is no textbook. I mean, for people to sit down and write a textbook, there has to be some quiet. Okay, some things have actually settled down. So any paper I write might have a half-life period of 2 months, and before which something else happens, by which time something else happens. So you get a, in my readings list, there are readings which are actual chapters from various printed publications, etc., with proper permissions from those guys, okay, which are essentially surveys of various areas. And there are also papers which are about that just probably appeared like a couple of years back, or maybe even a year back, or maybe, if we are lucky, just this year. Okay? So you would wind up going the spectrum of things which are more or less quietened down to things which are completely changing still. Okay. As I said, I won't give any handouts, and you're supposed to print stuff or read stuff off of web if you want to do it that way, whichever is fine. I try, except for the survey thing which I'm going to give, I gave you today, I don't plan to give you any handouts. All the handouts will be on the web. Okay. Next class, I'm going to do the text retrieval. Actually, it turns out that you'll notice one very, very important thing, which is the number of slides I bring to the class and the slides that I actually talk about are only vaguely connected, okay, in the sense sometimes I wind up spending a lot more time. For example, today I'm stopping at what I thought would be my half point. Okay, there are a lot more slides that are after this, except when you read them, you would decide, you would see that I've actually discussed them in a different context. Okay, one thing I want you to know, when you're printing slides, never print the hidden slides. You guys know PowerPoint, right? Yeah, so when you're printing the dialog box, it says, it comes with print hidden slides with a tick. Untick it. Because I normally, even after, I normally put a lot more slides which I don't actually have any plans to discuss, just because I want them there so that I can decide to bring them in. So you go home and you print these and you find that there are 10,000 slides and I only talked about five, you know, it's not that bad. Normally you should only get 25 slides and I only talked about five, which is normal, because the other slides I have actually talked about it in the guise of what I'm doing already. Okay? We would, so most of next class is going to be about text retrieval, and we'll start talking about information retrieval in general. But before that, I would go through this one couple of slides. I was hoping to do it today, but this slide, which is essentially what I was sort of discussing with respect to the three parts of the course. I'm trying to go, before we go into the semester, I want to convince you that we really are talking about three traditional disciplines and how they are applied, how they have to change because of the web, okay? And having done that, I'll start talking about information retrieval. That's the plan for next class. Questions? Nothing? Have I answered everything about taking the course at all? Yes, sir. That's a good question. Probably four. But they would be given in this asynchronous fashion, as I said. You know, as the problem is, you know, number of homeworks is a discrete quantity, and the semester is a more continuous thing. So I'd like to try and put up the homework question that's relevant to what I'm discussing today up there, so that if you are one of those people who want to do it on that day, they can do it. Okay? But you can also be, you know, one of the other type of people who would like to wait until the very last minute and get the rush of completing everything in 3 minutes and coming to the class. So both are fine. Okay? But approximately four homeworks. Okay? One other thing, let me just show you this. I know that we kind of are running out. On the web page below this line, there are old course lecture notes. I'm sure many of you probably already saw this before coming to the class today. These were the lecture notes for all the topics that I used last time. I'm going to derive what I'm doing this year from those, except I get to change them. Okay? So I get to change them until I walk into the class, and sometimes after I walk out of the class, I normally go and add stuff which reflects what has been said in the class. Okay? But you can use these to kind of get a feeling for what's going to happen. Apart from the readings, you can also look at these slides. Okay? The second thing I want to say about the old course is these are kind of interesting. This is what people who took this course, I normally, and you have to do this too, so you can get prepared for this. At the end of the semester, so I expect that I'm teaching you something, right? Normally, the good thing is to stop asking questions and find out whether or not you actually got that. And I try to see what people thought they got. Not in the exam, which is a different way of getting, but, you know, just name the things that you even remember, you know, just the names, okay? And these are things that specifics to all the students, all of you wind up doing it if you wind up being in this class. At the end of the class, there would be a review session, right? Every class has a review session, except I don't do the review, you guys do it. Okay, you explain to me what you got. And it's useful for you to figure, look at this, because this is what people not unlike you have thought about this course. Not in terms of the teaching quality, all that stuff, that's all gone case. But in terms of what did they pick out of the course? What topics stood out? So I can tell you whatever I want to tell you standing here, but you know, it's like this great far-side cartoon of what we tell the dogs and what the dogs get out of it, right? I mean, I can assume that I'm giving the world's knowledge to you, but I could be stupid because I have no clue as to where you are starting from and I didn't really get you any farther. So this is what people thought about as to what they learned from the course. So you might want to look at this to get even more idea of what it is that will actually get done in the course. Okay? And finally, there is going to be a mail archive for this course. I send way too many mails, receive way too many mails, but I like it most of the time. So you're all, by virtue of being present in this class, have been automatically subscribed. If you already registered by about 11 o'clock today, you're already on the web list, on the mail list, and probably you got a welcome message from me. And that gets only worse. It's no longer welcome. More and more stuff would start coming your way. And just to get you a feel for that, if you go here and change it to S04, that's the number of mails that the poor guys last time had to deal with. Okay? You can actually look at them. There's not too many answers for the homework questions. But if they are, you can't use them. Remember that. You know, that's a nice way of, if you're a teacher. Here's the other interesting thing. You don't take courses to find out whether other people have answers, right? There's no real reason to take a course to find out whether other people already have the answers. You know, you just become a manager and hire a person. That's what you should do. You take courses to find out for yourself how to do it. So the fact that millions of people know how to do singular value decomposition doesn't help you one bit if you don't know it. So there is a reason as to why I'm saying don't use the answers even if you can get to them. You know, there's the whole reason to waste your life taking a course for an entire semester, and believe me, it's a lot of work. It's because hopefully you want to learn it. Okay? It's not the Google stuff of where can you find the answers. It's you actually have to know how to do it. Okay? Any other questions? Otherwise, I'll see you next class. See you guys.